You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
It's just gone 8 minutes past 12 o'clock. Good afternoon from me, Ray White, on the Midday Report this afternoon. We're coming up on the program in the next hour. KwaZulu-Natal battles to recover from a massive storm that has left at least 8 people dead. The Human Rights Commission is in Eldorado Park today to discuss racial tensions there. Talking security at shopping malls and complexes. Whose job is it to provide security for the tenants at these centres? And the Global T20 is postponed. What is the reason behind this? So lots to talk about on the program this afternoon. I'd like to hear from you, your views on these stories and others. You can SMS on 31702 or 31567 or tweet on @RayWhiteSA. Let's go to our top story, and the arbitration hearing at the Life is Said Many tragedy continues today after testimony that the provincial health executive pushed for the patients to be relocated. 118 mentally ill people died as a result of this. Now, senior Gauteng Health Department official who headed the Esedimeni project at the time admitted yesterday that grave mistakes were made by the government, saying he regrets everything that took place. On the line is Eyewitness News reporter Masego Rahlaga, who has been covering this story. Good afternoon, Masego. Take us through then what's happened so far today then.
Good afternoon, Ray. Well, first of all, we've just come back from lunch, or rather tea. And during the tea break, Ray, Levi Mosinogi, who, as you said, was heading the project, started to cry, and he was actually comforted by some of the family members of the patients who died and the patients who survived. So that's just the first thing that I wanted to let you know. But in terms of his testimony today, Ray, it's the second day that he's taking the stand. He's been cross-examined. The plan was for him to be the fall guy, seemingly, because, Ray, this project was the health department decided in early 2015 that it would terminate its contract with Esedimeni. But Mosinogi only got his appointment, well, he says he only got his appointment on the 9th of December that year. And within 3 months, which was March 2016, he had to start this project and finish it within the next 3 months. So he had to start moving patients from March 2016 to June 2016, when he was only appointed officially as head of the project in December. But also you must remember that he actually accepted that appointment, which means he accepts the responsibility that comes with it. And he himself kept saying that it was a very complex project. So by accepting responsibility to do it, he also actually admitted that as a leader, he was negligent and he didn't do all the things that he needed to do.
Masego, have other officials, any other officials sort of stood up and said, you know what, we did something that was wrong here. We need to be honest about this.
Well, Ray, there are officials who stood up to admit that they were wrong. For instance, on the 1st of this month, as you know, for South Africa, October is Mental Health Awareness Month. And on the 1st, the current MEC, Dr. Gwen Ramakhuba, and the Premier of Gauteng, David Makhura, were in Atteridgeville to launch the month of October being Mental Health Awareness Month. And they did apologize to the families. And the families, in fact, said that was the first time that the health department apologized publicly. But it's still not enough for the family, Stephen, Ray, and for most of South Africans who are angry about what happened with this Esedimeni story. It's not enough for them because they're saying that they want the public apology to come from one person, and that is the former health MEC, Gatani Mahlang.
Are the families there though now? Oh, and also, what are they saying about this?
Well, Ray, throughout the time that Mosinogi has been testifying, where he would say things like he regrets everything, where he would admit to getting pressure from the MEC. And actually today he said that he believes that, he told the Chief Justice that he believes that a department as big as a health department for any province should actually be headed by people who are trained in that field. And remember, Ray, Gatani Mahlangu is a qualified teacher. So you can make your decision there. But what he's basically saying is that it should be a doctor or someone in that field that should head a department like that. But what the family members have been saying throughout his testimony and when he apologized and things like that was that it's too late. Their family members have died, and you know, they are badly affected by this, and they, the circumstances that they died in is also what hurts them the most. But it was also quite refreshing to see the family members comfort him earlier today when he was crying during tea. It was a different type of emotion at that time, Ray.
What do the family members want?
Ray, the family members want an apology. The family members want the retired Deputy Chief Justice Sihang Motsoeneke to subpoena the former MEC, Katani Mahlangu. They want to hear from her. They want to know from her what it is that went wrong during that project. They feel like she was very arrogant during the time that she was supposed to answer questions when patients started dying last year. They want closure, Ray, and they want the arbitration process, obviously, which was a recommendation by the Health Ombudsman, Professor Malakaburu Mahoba. They want to be compensated for everything that has happened. And you know, Ray, what we've known for a long time, but what was repeated here today that made the mood a bit somber was how these patients were moved from SET Medi to these NGOs. They were put behind vans that were open vans, and their limbs were tied like animals. So The families want closure, they want answers, and they just really want to know what happened.
Eyewitness News reporter Masego Rahlaga on the line from Parktown North.
SMS us on 31702 or 31567.
Senior KwaZulu-Natal officials are visiting several sites across the province today to assess the damage caused by yesterday's storms. At least 8 people were killed. Rescuers have been searching for a toddler from an Umlazi creche who was swept away by the floods. A media conference is now underway. Let's see what they are saying. All right, the sound is a little bit bad there. We'll touch back with that a little bit later on. On the line is spokesperson for the KwaZulu-Natal EMS, Robert McKenzie. Good afternoon, Robert. Welcome to the Midday Report. Has the toddler been found yet?
Good day. Thanks for having me on the show. As far as I'm aware, at this stage, searches are still continuing for this little one that was washed away in the floods yesterday. And at this stage, rescue efforts are continuing.
We'll have to see what happens, see if that continues. How many people were killed or injured in the flooding? What is the latest death toll? I'm seeing signs of 8.
I've also just had an update that there's been as many as 8 people who have sustained fatal injuries. These range from several incidents that occurred, almost all directly related to the rain and the weather.
Yeah. Were you able to cope with what happened yesterday? This was extensive, wasn't it?
Yes, most definitely. It was extensive. It was sudden, and it was quite widespread as well. But emergency services teamed together in a collaborated approach meant that we were able to respond to these emergencies. Everybody got their hands stuck in and work together in a combined approach between all the government organizations as well as private ambulances and private security companies, etc., team together to be able to handle the situation.
Just looking at some of those visuals, Robert, many cars were caught in water. How do you reach or help people in such a situation?
Yeah, that's a very tricky and dangerous situation. The best is for motorists to try and avoid getting into that situation in the first place by not driving through large pools of water or water that's streaming over a low-level bridge. But it does become a very tricky situation for rescue. And normally rescuers who are trained in swift water rescue have to go and rescue these people.
Have provisions been made then for those left destitute?
Most definitely. Disaster management teams are out in the affected communities today, seeing who needs assistance and what and how they have been affected. So if you are needing assistance due to being damaged to your house, etc., you're urged to contact your local ward councillor so assistance can be directed your way.
Is the province battling to cope with this, or were you ready for this?
I think it was very short notice that we had on Monday afternoon. Late Monday afternoon, we started getting warnings that we were going to be getting heavy rain. But I believe that we were able to cope with it.
Spokesperson for the KwaZulu-Natal EMS, Robert McKenzie, on the line from Durban.
702 and Cape Talk.
The Midday Report.
The Human Rights Commission is in El Dorado Park today to discuss racial tensions there. The area has been seen continued protests, including the Klipspruit West School. That's where parents demanded that a black school principal be replaced after his appointment. This caused major consternation. On the line is Eyewitness News reporter Tando Kubeka. Good afternoon, Tando. Good to have you on the Madeira Report this afternoon. Why has the commission convened these hearings now?
Good afternoon, Ray. Well, today is day two of these hearings by the Human Rights Commission here in El Dorado Park. And basically, they are to investigate allegations of racism, maladministration, and inequality in the community. Now, Ray, the main reason for these hearings emanates from the recent ongoing violent protests at Klipspruit West Secondary School, which resulted learning and teaching being disrupted. The demonstrations were sparked, like you've mentioned, the appointment of the black principal, and the community claims that the appointment was flawed. Now, since then, Ray, there's been unrest in the area. Gauteng Education MEC Panyazo Lesufi had to intervene, and, you know, to try and restore peace and, you know, calm in the area, he then disbanded the school's SGB, and a new one was appointed. Lesufi also appointed a new principal. But despite those interventions, the problems at the school continued. And to make matters worse, recently, SATU also withdrew its members from El Dorado Park area, saying that their members are being victimized. Lesufi then also met with the union to try, you know, and find a resolution. And the members have since returned to the classroom, you know, for the interest of teaching and learning.
Mm. What then, Tando, has been said so far today then?
Well, Ray, a teacher from the Aldo Main School in El Dorado Park has given her submissions, basically saying as a black educator, she hasn't experienced racism from the community of El Dorado Park, but she says that the only time she experienced racial discrimination was from the management of the school, who she says are mostly, you know, colored people. She also said she would like to see more black people in management positions at the school, and we also had an SGB member from the Klipspruit West Secondary School who was the second person to give her submissions, and she's currently still on the podium. And what she said so far is that, you know, she's denied, Ray, that the school is racist. In fact, she's accusing the black teachers of victimizing colored children at the school, and she insists that they don't have a problem with the black principal, which was appointed before, but the process that was followed in that appointment. And she's also said that they're unhappy that MEC Panyazo Lesufi disbanded the previous SGB, Ray, saying that, you know, the MEC acted out of his powers.
Tando, has a large number of people arrived at the proceedings?
Right, we have a crowd of people who are here today, including community leaders, you know, members from in and around El Dorado Park. We also have parents of children from the Klipspruit West Secondary School, who are also here today. And later, we're expecting the current SGB of you know, that school to give their submissions, and the current principal of Klipspruit West Secondary School to give her submissions to the commission, which we're, you know, we're looking forward to hear. Yeah.
Eyewitness News reporter Tando Kubeka on the line from El Dorado Park. The presidency has dismissed claims by the so-called SABC 8 journalists after spokesperson Bongani Mahunga had a secret meeting, or that's what they called it, a secret meeting with the acting head of news at TV, Nyanda Molete. That was last week. They claim the meeting was to affirm the SABC news division as a propaganda tool for the ANC. The presidency, however, says the meeting was to provide information about its day-to-day functions, as it does with any other media institution. So what is the status of the SABC? There has been a delay in appointing the board there. Joining us is spokesperson for Union Bamawu, Hannes Dubasson. Good afternoon, Hannes. Welcome to the Madeira Report.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
The interim SABC board seem to have done their best. Your thoughts on that?
Yes, they have most certainly tried their best to stabilize the SABC and to get it back on track. Unfortunately, as we know, they are no longer in office.
Now, you've spoken to staff members at the SABC. What is the state of play with regards to political interference? What are people saying?
Well, obviously, we are concerned and gravely concerned that there is political interference in the SABC. The SABC is a public broadcaster. It is there for the people of South Africa. It doesn't matter what political party they belong to or support. And, of course, if one political party wants to capture and dominate the SABC, that, of course, is a huge problem.
What is morale like at the SABC?
Staff are really, really very, very low on morale at this point in time. They've not received a salary increase. It's not due to their own doing that the SABC is currently in the situation that it is. In fact, the fact that the president is not signing the board into office is creating more negative publicity for the SABC, which, of course, will not attract any advertisers and business. So people are really they are fed up. They want the SABC to work properly, to function properly as a public broadcaster. And we've tested the willingness of staff to then, of course, withhold their labor to force the SABC to do a few things. The first one, of course, and that the SABC cannot do, but the portfolio committee and the president is to appoint the board as soon as possible. Then the second one is to deal with the unilateral restructuring at the SABC, which has happened and which has subsequently been reversed. And then, of course, a salary increase. Cost has increased for everyone, so did medical aid costs and all of that. And employees are earning less at this point in time in what they've earned comparing to the same period last year.
Hannes, what are you going to do? Are you going to down tools then? Are you going to protest outside Radio Park?
Well, if the majority of members are willing to do that, then that is definitely what we're going to do. We will then start a legal process to ensure that that would be a protected strike. And which will take a little bit of time, but that is where we're ultimately aiming at. Of course, if these things do not get addressed on an urgent basis.
Spokesperson for Union Bamawu at the SABC, Hannes Dubasson, I really do appreciate your time on the Midday Report.
The Midday Report. Business.
Packaging and paper company Mondi says its full-year results will be slightly lower than analysts' expectations due to cost pressures and also adverse currency moves. The company's Johannesburg shares fell by about 9% earlier on today. Mondi says underlying operating profit rose 8% to $290 million in the 3 months to September, helped by higher selling prices. But the company, which also operates in Europe, says its full-year underlying performance will miss market expectations due to the currency moves. In international news now, Reuters has revealed that software produced by Microsoft has been acquired by state organizations and firms in Russia and Crimea, despite sanctions barring U.S. companies from doing business with them. Official documents show the limitations in the way foreign governments and firms enforce the U.S. sanctions imposed on Russia over its annexation of the Crimea Peninsula from Ukraine in 2014. The products in each case were sold via third parties, and Reuters has no evidence that Microsoft sold products directly. Looking at the markets now, and the Rand has strengthened about 1% against the dollar, with the emerging market currencies also improving. Emerging market stocks sailed to fresh six-year highs, buoyed by optimism over global growth and also company earnings. Currencies from emerging economies benefited from the dollar, stalling on concerns over U.S. President Donald Trump's tax plan. The oil share up over 0.25%, still in record territory at 57,781 points. The banks up over 1.5%. Gold mine is down, I'm afraid, the other way, down over 1%. The rand is now 13.58 to the dollar, 17.92 to the pound, 16.05 to the euro. Gold $1,289.63, and then Brent crude oil is $56.92. More business news with Bruce on the Money Show this evening. 24 minutes to 1 o'clock. And talking security at shopping malls and complexes now. Whose job is it to provide security for the tenants at shopping centres? Is it the tenants or is it centre management? Well, the Madeira Report has received complaints from tenants at a certain shopping mall. They have been robbed a few times and have pleaded with the owner to intervene. The Madeira Report has intervened instead, and a meeting will now take place with the between the different parties concerned. I'll be following this up with the owner and the tenants, and if need be, we'll get both sides on the show. But for now, the complex will not be identified. And the reason for this is it could now be a target once again because security is not good there. That's the bottom line, but they have agreed to talk. On the line, though, is Mark Leathers, a partner and attorney at McNaughton Company. Good afternoon, Mark. Welcome to the Madeira Report.
Hi there, how are you?
Good to have you on the show, Mark. Is an owner responsible for security at the premises, or does it come down to the tenant?
Well, firstly, it depends on the actual premises. A tenant is responsible for security within their own shop. With regards to the common areas, the walkways, the parking areas, that sort of thing, that is going to depend on the terms of the lease agreement and also the size or monetary turnover of the tenant. Generally, the answer is going to be that the owner is responsible, that they have to provide a safe environment, and this requirement stems from sections 48 onwards of the Consumer Protection Act. These sections state that a supplier, which the lessor or the landlord would be in this case, may not require a consumer to waive liability of that supplier of goods or services on terms which are unfair or unreasonable. It says that the consumer, which would be the tenant, is entitled to goods which are of a good quality and reasonably suited for the purposes for which they're intended. And an unsafe shopping center is not reasonably suited to having lots of customers, which is the intention of leasing premises in the first place.
So Mark, to what extent must a landlord go to? I mean, must you put spikes up? Must you put boom gates up? I mean, where do you draw the line with this?
It's going to depend on the circumstances. There is no legal definition as to what is required. Various centres have done various things. Some have contracted guards. Others have installed CCTV. Others have put up boom gates. But the baseline is that the property owner needs to take whatever steps are objectively fair and reasonable to keep the property safe for the tenants and their customers.
So there is legal recourse then when it comes to the tenants?
Most definitely. It's going to, again, depend on the size of the tenant as to whether they benefit under the Consumer Protection Act or not. But tenants under the Consumer Protection Act really do have it quite good. They've got an easy means of getting out of the lease without penalty, and they can also refer these non-compliances to the Consumer Commission for compliance orders or fines against the landlord. Your larger tenants who do not enjoy recourse under the Consumer Protection Act still do have rights under our common law. In other words, both parties to a lease agreement need to act in good faith to each other.
Right.
And a landlord merely saying, it's not my problem, I'm not concerned, is definitely not acting in the best of faith towards a tenant. So they would have recourse as well, just not under the Consumer Protection Act.
Certainly is very interesting. Partner and attorney at McNaughton Company, Mark Leathers, I really appreciate your time on the Madeira Report.
The Midday Report on your number one news and talk station.
The opposition in Kenya has called for a fresh round of protests around the country. This follows Raila Odinga's announcement late yesterday that he would not participate in an election rerun against President Uhuru Kenyatta. The country's Supreme Court nullified the August 8 presidential election, citing systematic errors there. On the line is Voldy Corriser, our EWN correspondent in Nairobi. Voldy, just starting with a general question, why did Raila Odinga pull out then?
Because Odinga and the NASA coalition, Ray, believes that he won't get a fair chance. Even though he went to court, got this election nullified, the NASA coalition believes that the election is rigged in President Uhuru Kenyatta's favor. And his direct quote is that he can't play if the playing field is not level.
Just hearing you say that, so he's called for nationwide protests. What has happened today so far then?
Well, the protests here in downtown Nairobi turned a little bit chaotic about half an hour ago, with police being forced to fire live ammunition as protesters made their way downtown from Uhuru Park, which is where they massed since early this morning, down towards the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission headquarters called Anniversary Towers. Police dispersed them first with tear gas and were then forced to use live ammunition as protesters tried to loot, which is a pattern we've seen with these bi-weekly protests that NASA have called for the past 3 weeks. Everything is turning calm again now as they regroup at Uhuru Park.
What is government saying about his withdrawal? I mean, what's the way forward here?
Kenyatta and Jubilee saying that they will go to election on October 26th. But what is critical here is that there was a high court decision this morning allowing other presidential candidates back on the ballot. We're waiting for the IEBC or the Electoral Commission to come out and actually make a statement about the way forward. But something else that happened this morning, Ray, was that Parliament passed amendments to the country's electoral laws. And one of those amendments states that if it's a two-contender presidential race and someone pulls out, that the one who remains should be declared the winner, should be made president. So Kenyatta is yet to sign that bill that was passed by Parliament into law, to sign that amendment into law.
Sure, the bill that will give himself a job. Valdi Karosa, our EWN reporter in Nairobi, thanks for your time on the Madeira Report.
SMS us on 31702 or 31567.
Some of your tweets and your SMSs. One says, Ray, what has happened to Robert McBride and his alleged assault against his daughter? Well, if I remember, memory serves me correctly, it was about a week ago he was in court and that case was then postponed, I think for further investigation, but it is still underway. The other one says, has an independent autopsy been done on all these unfortunate patients? Talking about life, I said to many, there may be a common cause here, says Gavin. Gavin, I think you're quite right. Maybe there should be a broader investigation into that. And then on Atre White Essay, Make Willie says, Mosinoghi is protecting the big fish, talking about Isidimeni. Kidani Matlangu must come and testify. I think that's the whole thing. I think that's exactly what they want her to do, is to come forward. The big question is, will she come on her own or will she need to be subpoenaed? 12 minutes to 1 o'clock, and the Global T20 has been postponed for a year, but reasons haven't been given as to why this is. It also coincides with the departure of Cricket South Africa's CEO, Haroon Logat. So what exactly is going on here with Cricket South Africa and the bigger picture? On the line is a cricket writer at Times Media, Telford Vice. Good afternoon, Telford. Welcome to the show. Why cancel the Global T20 then?
Hello, Ray. In as few words as I can manage, because it's going to lose millions of dollars, no mind rand. So that's why. And Cricket South Africa say that they're in this position because, partly because at least, they weren't terribly sure what Haroon Logat was doing in setting up this tournament. There are allegations of secrecy in the way he went about his business. And if you believe the board of CSA, which I've no good reason to do, actually, they saw this coming too late.
Why was Haroon Logat told to go? We still don't know.
We still don't know. And you know, Chris Nenzani, the president of CSA, came all the way from Johannesburg, or in fact East London, I imagine, to Bloemfontein the other day to come and tell us, to come and shout at the media and tell them, how dare you report these things? These things are not true. But when he was asked, you know, well, what is the truth then, Mr. Nenzani? He said, I can't tell you because we're still negotiating Mr. Logat's package, which was irritating for every journalist in the room. To be yelled at and then to be told, well, we can't tell you what the truth is, we're just telling you you're wrong. So we don't know. And yes, it is a sticky thing because Logat's contract was all the way up until 2019 and, of course, not earning too shabby a salary. So this thing needs to be negotiated by CSA and Logat and I'm sure a slew of lawyers. And you know, that does make things complicated. But you can't stop people from asking questions because, of course, Logat was closely tied to this tournament. It seems to have been his big idea, and he ran with it as far as he could. And it seems like he more or less, you know, gave himself enough rope to hang himself, if you believe certain people.
But Telford, this is very interesting, because when you organise a tournament like the Global T20, there's literally millions and millions of dollars changing hands. I mean, is there no money trail here? What are the Indian officials saying?
The Indian officials are, according to my sources, very happy to see the back of Lorgat. They've not liked, Indian cricket people have not liked Harun Lorgat for a long time, going all the way back to when he was chief executive of the International Cricket Council and, you know, made some decisions they didn't like during the 2011 World Cup. So there's bad blood between Indian cricket people and Harun Lorgat that does, as I say, go back a long way. They're also very happy with the way that CSA have handled the fallout from this, getting rid of Lorgat. I know the press release said, you know, parted amicably or whatever. What nonsense. When an English football manager leaves his club in these circumstances, we write what it is. He's been fired. We're pussyfooting around that as the media to some extent, and it irritates me. But yeah. So the Indian people in the GLT20 are quite happy to see the back of Harun Lorgat. Whether they're quite happy that the tournament has been put on hold for a year at least is another question. But in my experience, team owners, all they want to do is make money. If they can't make money, they don't want to lose any. So I can imagine this is why they're happy with this decision.
What about the players, though? They must be very angry about this.
Well, you know, the players, yes, I'm sure they are angry. They signed up for this. It's not going to happen. Some of them may have spent the money already that they don't have, kind of thing. But the players also need to grow up a bit. They need to ask questions and say, is this thing legit? Is it going to happen? Do I really want to be part of this? And they can't complain too much because they haven't done a stitch of work towards this tournament yet. You can't get paid for it. You haven't done. And I think it's time the players just, you know, caught a wake up and a reality check.
You say grow up. I mean, hold on a second. Isn't there a huge gap in the fixture, though? Because these guys are sort of booked. In November, I'll be doing the Global T20. In December, I'll be playing in Australia. Doesn't it come down to that? They're saying, okay, great, thanks for that. But now I am sort of empty for November.
Yes, they might be empty for November. They could use that time to go and take a holiday. They could use it to go and play in some other league somewhere else. I mean, there are other leagues happening. They could do that. I would, if I put myself in their shoes, I would be unhappy. You know, I thought I was going to earn this money. I thought I was going to be part of something quite big and brash and whatnot, and finally South African cricket catching up with the world. But I don't think we can feel too sorry for the players. They're not poor. You know, earn a lot of money.
Yeah. Harun Lorgat going. I mean, has the CSA, have they said anything to you about, let's have a press conference, or given you some sort of time frame to be honest with you and say, listen, this is why he went? And has there been any communication with you?
There has been. There was that press conference in Bloemfontein that I spoke about, but that was more irritating than what it was worth. Yes, fine. You know, CSA need to sort out with Lorgat and need to tie up his package and all the rest of it without him dragging them to the CCMA for what's it called, constructive dismissal. So it is a very tricky stage of this whole thing. But no, there's been not a lot in terms of hard information. You talk to some staff members who are thrilled that he's gone because, by all accounts, he was not a very nice man. Yeah. There's stories of lie detector tests for the staff or speaking to the media and those kinds of just straight out of the movies kind of situation. So I don't think people are unhappy that he's gone at CSA. Some people would have been, people very close to him, but by and large, it seems like people are happy to have seen the back of him. As for reasons why and hard information, well, what we know is that late last year, he got into a bit of a squabble with Nasai Appiah, who is CSA's chief financial officer. Appiah laid a complaint about a lack of transformation at CSA's office. When this was investigated, it was found that Appiah had a point, in fact, and that while CSA are quite colourful, if I can put it that way, not too many white males running around there, they did not have any black African women in positions of authority. That investigation did have a point, and they ended up appointing a black African female company secretary, which is obviously quite an important position. But the fallout from that is that the relationship between Lorgat as the CEO and Nasai Appiah as the CFO was pretty much destroyed. And it's been a bit of a bad place between them since then, and that really has been instrumental in what's happened to Lorgat now.
Certainly has been. Cricket writer at the Times Media and correspondent from Cape Town, Telford Vice. Thanks for your time on the Bidera Report. I do appreciate it.
702 and Cape Talk.
The Midday Report.
There has been a rather huge outcry against movie producer Harvey Weinstein, who has been fired after numerous allegations of sexual harassment against him. A number of stars have come forward, including Angelina Jolie. Now, The New Yorker has released a taped sting operation of Weinstein chatting to a young model at a hotel in 2015, trying to convince the young model to go up to his room. Let's take a listen.
If you don't, if you embarrass me in this hotel,
I'm not embarrassing you. It's just that I don't feel comfortable.
I mean, don't have a fight with me in the hall. Please, I'm not going to do anything. I swear, my children, please come in. On everything, I'm a famous guy.
I'm feeling very uncomfortable right now.
Please come in now, and 1 minute. And if you want to leave, when the guy comes with my jacket,
why yesterday you touch my waist?
No, please, I'm sorry. Just come on. I'm used to that.
Are you used to that?
Yes, come in.
No, but I'm not used to that.
I won't do it again. Come on, sit here. Sit here for a minute, please.
No, I don't want to.
If you do this now, you will embarrass me.
No.
Fine. They will call me again. Okay? Sorry. I promise you I won't do anything.
I know, but yesterday was too much.
The guy is coming. I will never do another thing to you. 5 minutes. Don't ruin your friendship with me for 5 minutes.
I know, but it's kind of like, it's too much for me. I can't.
Please, you're making a big scene here.
No,
please.
But I want to leave.
Okay, bye.
And that was Harvey Weinstein in a police sting operation. They declined to prosecute him at the time. On the line is US-based EWN correspondent Nadia Nyerfitu. Good afternoon, Nadia. A huge backlash against Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, indeed, Ray. You know, the story has just gotten deeper and deeper. It started with accounts of 8 women who had been allegedly paid off by him in settlements. Sexual harassment, and now the New Yorker today released an even more damning report of actual claims of rape against him, 3 claims. And then since then, we've had women not just coming out in support of other women who've spoken out, but we've had A-listers like Gwyneth Paltrow and Angelina Jolie actually speak out about their experiences before they were Oscar-winning stars with Harvey Weinstein. And we're just seeing it is far-reaching now in terms of the kind of reign of terror, so to speak, that this man has inflicted upon Hollywood.
I believe his wife has also just left him.
Yes, you know, Georgina Chapman, she is the she's one of the names behind Marquesa, the fashion label. She originally said she would be standing by him and sticking by him, but as these more and more allegations have come out, she has now said that she is going to be leaving him. And it's just further repercussions for him. You know, he has been fired from the board of the company that he started with his brother. The Weinstein Company is behind a whole host of Oscar-winning films, The King's Speech, Shakespeare in Love, even the Mandela Long Walk to Freedom movie. Harvey Weinstein was involved. He was the executive producer on that.
US-based Eyewitness News correspondent Nadia Nyerfitu. It remains to be seen whether charges will be levelled against him. And that wraps up the show. I'd love to chat to you on @RayWhiteSA, but it is 1 o'clock.